It's okay that I'm here.
Okay, I'll say hi.
Okay, so this is this talk I was prepared before, but I didn't prepare it for this, so it's kind of slide by slide rather than a fraction of slides. What I want to tell you about is the work that is continuous for the past few years, with results which are very, very new, that was just written up and sent out, which is the Kondo regime. to tell you about measuring of phase in a quantum dot, and you will see it in a minute. Most of us experimentalists in transport are measuring conductance, and which is in a way an absolute value of the transmission coefficient. And we throw away the phase for a coherent system most of the time. And that's a shame. Why should I think it's equal partner to the absolute value of the transmission amplitude. So what we concentrated in the past few years is measuring also the phase. And measuring the phase, you have to build an interferometer to measure the phase of that the electron acquires as it reflects from the system or when it transmits through a system. And the particular system that we decided to study, which is most conveniently easy to study, is a quantum dot. And the work was done here by two students there, Yang Ji and Shpintzak, and Ralph Schuster, which was a postdoc, and fabrication was done by Diana Mahalo, which is the microfabrication. The nanofabrication is here on the bottom, and Vladimir Romansky and Adash Trickman grew the layers. And we greatly, as usual, appreciate the help of our theoretical group that is here. We had many, many discussions with Julian Wen, you will get when Yuval Oreg and Yoshua Levinson. So what I'll tell you about is the first question that we ask, even if a quantum dot is a coherent object, in the particular situation that we work in. I mean, maybe it can coherent, it can be coherent or not, and then to measure the phase. And there are two regimes that we studied then, the phase. One is the Coulomb blockade regime, and the other one is the Kondo regime.
One question, sort of the general the dose for you. You haven't changed much. The dose is always more or less the same. Do you have an idea of whether or not it's theta, classically theta, the dose?
Well, there are tons of papers if the dots are classical or, I mean, by classical or chaotic, you mean...
For example, I see the distribution of Coulomb blockade peaks.
Yes.
To be more or less the same height. Not much of the compression, but we do see in other experiments.
So you're asking, look, my dots, our dots, are the dots of everybody else in this field. They're the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The size can be different, the structure, the depths of the 2D gas can be different. We never studied, like Charlie Marcus, for example, carefully distribution, or Uri Sivan, as a matter of fact, distribution of peak heights. So I cannot tell you if my dots are different than the others. I believe they are not.
Yeah, but even if you are studying the coherence, it may be that the difference dot
will behave differently.
Right.
Okay, so as you will see, I'm not stressing here. What I will show that there is a coherent component going through the dot. I'm not saying, and I'm not studying how much of the conductance is coherent and how much is not. Then I take the coherent component and I look on the phase. So I think the different dots might have different coherent component, maybe. Okay? But this is not my interest here. Okay? So I didn't have to address this particular issue. So a dot that you see, and yesterday I had a bit longer introduction, but I will not repeat it now, that you have a little puddle of electrons which is likely coupled to two leads, two thermoses, and the dot is very, very small, and it has a small capacitance, and as a result it has a large charging energy. So you have to give the electrons some energy to put them into the dot or to take them out of the dot. And because of small size, there is also quantization, and there is here on the right, you see sort of a symbolic picture of the quantization of one particle levels in the dot. And here, when we align at almost zero voltage, when I align one of these levels with the Fermi energy, then I have transport, and when I misalign it, then I don't have transport in general. You will see in the Kondo regime it's different. So this is sort of an on and this is an off. And as I change, and you see down there, this is the plunger gate voltage, as I move this point down, or as I change the thickness of the dot, or the width of the dot, and this ladder is climbing up or down, then I get this Coulomb blockade peak says every time electrons, a new electron moves into the dot. Okay. Now, the typical numbers here of our dot, and we have two types of dots that I will talk to you about. The first one, which will be in the Coulomb blockade regime, is people from outside the field, you can see the size is about 300 by 300 nanometers, and it contains somewhere between 100 to 300 electrons. It's a very, very tiny capacitance. So E squared over C is about half a millivolt, which is much, much greater than the temperature, okay? And the level spacing, the single particle level spacing, which is taken by the Fermi energy and dividing it by the number of electrons, is bigger than the level spacing is bigger than the width here of each level. Okay. So this is the dot that I'm going to study first. And to determine if the dot is coherent or not, it's very, very similar to a little bit part of the talk I gave yesterday, that we are building an interferometer, okay, which has a source and a drain, and as you will see, it has more drains, not only two, but ideally we have two paths. I arrange it so I have two paths. This is a reference path, and this is another path that the dot is sitting inside. And if I change now the phase in one of the arms, okay, then I will get here interference, which is the transmission amplitude here plus the transmission amplitude here, absolute value square. And I will see the phase difference between them, as you will see in a minute, as I change, as you will see, the magnetic field.
Bobby?
Yes?
I think that at this point it is fair to warn the audience that this expression is a non-holotype expression derived from an interactive system. And here, of course, phi is the relative phase between the two trajectories.
Yes.
Once you consider an interactive system, you are able to measure the phase. But certainly, this expression does not apply. You're measuring something, some sensitivity of the interference pattern to an allowable phase, but you're not allowed to use this expression.
Which expression? You mean T1 plus T2 absolute value square? I don't understand exactly why, but
because
I'm not saying what is T1 and T2. T1 and T2 might result from many body interactions, but you change the phase of T1 without affecting the phase of T2. So why can't you add two amplitudes?
No. This expression is a single particle expression. It doesn't hold for an interactive field. It's not. I mean, if you want you can define transmission amplitude, of course, of the single particle transmission amplitude, even in the presence of interactions. But it is not correct that the current or transmission probability of the conductance is the sum of the single particle amplitude squared for interacting system.
This problem was actually discussed in the first part of the program. We had a couple of our very hot discussion, and the consensus was that at zero temperature is better with the many body interactions, based on a paper of Mayer and Vinyard. So you know that's something that is saying not all theoreticians agree with what you said. Right?
So why is it valid at zero temperature?
Because otherwise you can have some elastic events which you have to properly subtract.
No, but first of all,
let's not start discussing. I mean, I'm saying
this is wrong.
You stated it as a theorem, and this is not what is written in the, you know, in the paper that people usually cite on that. So maybe we shouldn't go into this.
Okay, I cannot warn the audience because I have to warn myself first before warning the audience. I didn't even know about it.
But let me make a very strong statement. This is not correct in principle. This is not correct even at zero temperature. Because even at zero temperature, you can have processes of spin flip or otherwise. And I mean, of course, you can find, you know, coincidentally, coincidence, correct. But in principle, it is, I mean, every time you are using this expression for hydraulic system, you have to give good reasons why you are allowed to use this for hydraulic system.
I think what you're saying is that there is, because of interactions, in particular case of spill flip, you can have an incoherent path. And what Moti is talking is only about the coherent part. But you know, let's not really go into this. So it's really more complicated. But then,
I mean, just much of this is an impressionistic sort of description of what's happening at this level to discuss Tabalit and this kind of.
Well, he already knows the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we do, we are putting this dot inside in our Ollerbaum ring. You will see that the Ollerbaum ring is a bit modified. And we are changing the magnetic field, and every time that we are adding a flux quantum, then we this is experimental results that you see already here, we get only oscillatory behavior in the output current, in principle, if the dot is indeed coherent. And then when we look at this oscillatory behavior, and then we change some knob in the system, and then this oscillatory behavior will move, okay? And I will check, as you will see, I will check the phase difference between this one and the second pattern and the third pattern, and from there I will deduce the phase. This is sort of I'm not saying anything very important now, I'm just saying what is the process that I will work by. Now, if you now take a quantum dot and you look at it in a very sort of simplistic way, a resonant tunneling device, no interaction, nothing like this. So a resonant tunneling device has this bright Wigner type of transmission, and which gives us a Lorentzian transmission amplitude and the phase that you deduce from here. And the phase, as you scan through energy through this peak, then the phase climbs by pi, okay, from 0 to pi, minus pi to 2 to pi. This is what you expect to get if you just solve this simple bright Wigner. Now, if you have many peaks, you see one after the other, then you know, we don't know how to calculate it, so if you just calculate, take a one-dimensional model, okay, assume this is one dimension, and then in two dimensions it depends really on the exact shape of the dot, and you just calculate how the phase, as you scan this ladder down, how the phase changes, and you forget about spin and anything like this, so you have sort of resonant tunneling every time a level goes through, and the phase is supposed to climb by pi, another pi, another pi, etc. So this is sort of what we sort of calculated initially, anticipating the result that we might get. Okay, but more than this, we don't know. And if there is spin, then maybe each of these two peaks with this spin degenerate, then it might just come down because spins and then. But this is the only theoretical tools that we had at hand that we started with. Okay, so. So now I just want to alert you, to an issue of that I understand was discussed here, before, the issue of two-terminal versus four-terminal. If you go ahead and you prepare what I call the two-terminal device, namely an Aronoff-Bohm closed loop, you see, the current that will start at the source will come out at the drain. There is no place it can leak out. Okay, this is the way. If somebody wasn't yesterday, this is my quantum dot. So you see, this is an island here, and all these green lines are representing metallic gates that are biased negatively to deplete the region underneath. And these spaces are really not openings; they are closed. Electrons cannot leak out because there is here depletion regions because of electrostatic, and there's no leak out. Okay, no leak. So every electron that comes here has to come out here. So if you look at this two-terminal structure, and you put inside current conservation and Onsager relation, you get that the conductance G as a function of magnetic field has to be symmetric. So no matter what you do, if you put by hand and you force by hand some phase difference between here and here, still you will get not necessarily this picture, but you will get a symmetric picture with B. Okay? And this is bad, because then this picture will not move. We cannot measure the phase. Namely, this is not a two-pass interferometer. This is multi-pass interferometer. Because I was trying here to show that there are some, each of these junctions, there are reflections from here, and you can go back to the paper of Yuval and Joe and Asbel, I think it was 84, 85, that calculated these things, and you have really to sum about infinite number of passes here, and indeed you find that this is symmetric. We started to do experiments like this, unfortunately, and we found out the results didn't make any sense. And then very quickly we learned that we have to work with a two-pass interferometer, which we call here like a four-terminal measurement. It means that I open here leaks in the system, so I will try as best as I can to take all the reflected electrons and take them out of the system by some drains. Okay, so I will have only, if I can, if I'm successful enough, to have only two paths arriving at my drain. Okay, and if you do this, then this rigidity disappears, and you don't have this that the current has to be symmetric with respect to B, and you have a two-pass interferometer. That's all. So what we try to do is to build a two-pass interferometer, and the other parts which are confining here is just to collect more current. And I can now prove to you how it works. If you go ahead, you can build all this or that. So what we are building here, this is a two-dimensional electron gas. This is the gray regions here are metallic gates, okay, in both cases. And everywhere you see a gray region, you have a potential well underneath. It's an insulator underneath. So you see here, there is one input and one input and one output, and this is the quantum dot, and this gate is the plunger. When I change here the voltage, I squeeze the dot or open it up, adding or subtracting electrons. And electrons are coming under this bridge. This bridge is here to provide voltage to the center island. So electrons come like this and interfere like this, but there are many, many, many passes here. So this is two terminal. And here you see we opened it up, so you have a place here that the electrons, all the reflected part can escape, or most of it can escape. So initially we'll show you how this works, and you can see that you cannot determine a phase from here directly.
Sorry, the voltage and the current are still on the same two leads, right?
The voltage that you put in, if you apply voltage between source and base, let's call it base or something,
okay,
like this. So you inject electron here and you measure voltage between here and the open circuit voltage or current. Yes,
okay.
Yes. We don't apply voltage like this, we apply like this. So it's a four terminal. So now if you look now on the two terminal interferometer, so what we do here, you see that here is a magnetic, conductance versus magnetic field for different situation of the impurity of the quantum dot. So I add some phase. I don't know how much I add, but I add some phase. I dial in a potential in one of the arms. And you see it's symmetric. Nothing. This is sort of the voltage that I put on the impurity. It doesn't matter, it's just a number. You see that it's very, very symmetric. But what happens here, that you see the phase, for example, of the oscillation changes from here to here. It can be zero or pi. There's nothing in between. But what happens, you have another h over 2e. Very nice component that is discovered, that can be added without H over E at all. So you can go through a transition by dialing it, that every time you have G of B equal G of minus B, but the periodicity is H over E and H over 2E, and a combination of them. But it's always symmetric. So if I added some phase, pi over 4, and then, for example, to one of the arms, and I move from here to here, how do I know that I added pi over 4? I don't know. I can maybe calculate it if I know exactly all the trajectories, etc., but it's not obvious with how much. So this is not a good way to measure phase. Okay, that's what I wanted to prove, to show you. Now, this is also our way. We always look for H over 2E. If we don't see any H over 2E, we know that this is an open system, that we don't have this trajectory that go back on themselves. Okay? So when I go to this open system and I want to check how open is open, I look for H over 2E and I don't want to see any H over 2E in the system. So now let's go back to the four-terminal interferometer, okay, the one that I saw before. And I'm going now to turn on the dot, and this the current starts at zero up to this point here. This is the reference arm. And from the other arm, you go through the dot, and then you change the plunger, you change this ladder of states, and you go through these peaks. And as I showed you also yesterday, I measure the interference at each of these points, and you see that there is a strong interference component. Again, I don't know if everything is coherent or not, but a substantial part of the current that goes through the dot is coherent. And now this is not rigid anymore. You can see how this changes. Okay, as I move from here to here, etc., this added phase moves this picture. And if now I plot the phase, I get something like this. So this is the Bright Vignell, let's say. or it could be maybe broadened by temperature or not broadened by temperature. This is just an example now. And you see that the phase now changes from 0 to pi, okay? And then when it comes to some point here, it abruptly jumps back to 0 and it starts again. So it is nothing like we expected to see, okay? Now, this is one peak. So now if we look now on a series of peaks, okay, so now this is the conductance of the interferometer, just to measure the voltage at the output divided by the current at the input. This is sort of the transconductance. This is the strength of the Aronne-Bohm oscillations, okay? And these are not necessarily the same, because this contains the coherent and incoherent component. This is only the coherent component. And you see that the minimum here is a bit different than the minimum here. It depends on the phase. And this is the phase that we measure here. And you see that the phase is very, the phase repeats itself. Okay? It goes sort of from 0 to pi, and it jumps down on a scale which is narrower than any of the peak widths that we see here, and it starts again. Now, the reason that this looks like this, then the amplitude goes down and down, because as we move and make the plunger more and more positive, inadvertently, the dot gets more coupled to the outside. Maybe just to explain what I mean, I'll go back to the picture here. As I change this voltage here and make it more positive, then this opening seal, which is supposed to be two tunnel barrier seal, open up just by electrostatic induction. Okay, so the dot gets more and more open, and I widen the peak, and I start having overlap between peaks. And as a result, the phase is going down. If I would come back here and I'll correct for it and pinch the dot off, then this phase will increase to 0 to pi. So we made numerous amount of number of experiments like this in the past 3 or 4 years, and this always repeats itself. So now here we have, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 peaks. We measure 12 peaks. We never seen anything but a repetition of a phase between every peak and peak. So that we didn't see any spin degeneracy that's supposed to. It just everything always looked periodic. So this, if I summarize it here and I say, why do we have this very abrupt phase lapse between peaks? This is one question. Why all the resonances, as you go through all the resonances, as you add electrons, all of them are in phase? Okay? And I say here, sort of gently, there is no single acceptable explanation today. There are more than one. And there are people in this room that are responsible to a few of these explanations here, but I don't think there is the time now to talk about it. And Yuval has more than one explanation. I think maybe this time there is maybe a favorite one, and Joe has one that he worked out with Peter Silvestro that may be a single level responsible to all this transport, or maybe there is a final resonance there, or many body. The point which I'm trying only to point out that is it has been few years from the first publication of the data, and there is no single agreement on this, but it's a very powerful method to give more information about the dot. So the dot is not as simple as all of us believed it is. Okay? And phase indeed gives much more information than added information to the conductance. Okay, so this sort of a sales pitch to try to convince experimentalists to measure phase. Unfortunately, very few people in the world, I'm not aware of anybody, but our group that measured directly phase. So now I'm taking the same little device, and I want to change its parameter and move to the Condor regime. Now I have few transparencies saying something about the Condor regime. Do I have to do it, or all of you know about Condor much more than I do? There was some Condor before in the last few weeks, or shall I talk about Condor or not? I don't know. To show you how much I don't understand it, or?
It's not the way to ask a question. You should ask who wants me to.
Who wants me to talk about 5 transparencies of on Condor? Okay, good. Thanks, Yuval. Okay, so.
Now you ask who is ready to explain this
to. Okay, so I'll tell you my simplistic view of Condor that allowed us to make this experiment. So I know not very much about it, and I don't understand it deeply, and I'll show you my picture of it. So first, just a brief history. It was discovered in the 30s when people looked on metals and saw an abnormal temperature dependence when the metals were lightly doped with magnetic impurities. When they decreased the temperature, decreased it more and more, suddenly the resistance went up. And this was explained by Kondo in the 60s as a spin flip scattering with these magnetic impurities. And later on, more recently, Glassman, Reich, and all suggested that one can replace the magnetic impurity with a quantum dot which is spin polarized. So this quantum dot can play the role of a magnetic impurity, and you can find the Kondo effect using a quantum dot. And then it was indeed done, first by Dan Ralph, with a metallic point contact, a metal point contact, and later on by David Goldaberg-Gordon, which started really the field. This was a very important paper that started the field of Kondo measurement in a mesoscopia. Okay, the reason that it's so powerful, because if you have a metal and you have magnetic impurity, there's very little you can do with it. There's no knobs you can change. You can change temperature. But what else can you do? But here, if you now have this quantum dot, you can change the coupling of the quantum dot to the leads by pinching it off or on. You can make it magnetic or non-magnetic by adding electrons inside. You can apply voltage in. I mean, you have all these parameters, so you can play and study Kondo fantastically, okay? Now, aside from all this explanation and numerous number of papers that explain Kondo, there were a few papers that suggested also what is the scattering angle as an electron scatters from this impurity with a cloud of electrons around it. When it scatters out, what is the phase that it acquires by reflection? So all the calculation of the phase, and these are like two papers on bulk, and one paper recently appeared in four mesoscopic quantum dot in 2D, okay, suggested that you should measure pi over 2. So nobody measured it in 3D. How do you measure it? You cannot measure it in 3D. At least I don't know how to measure it. But in 2D, it's easy, right? Because you take a quantum dot and you do what we did. You just stick it into an interferometer. Okay, so this was the motivation for us to go ahead and do it. So what happens in the Kondo? First of all, the requirements to get the Kondo effect and what is the manifestation. First, the Fermi level is really aligned. This is now, let's say, a single particle level, which is spin degenerate, okay? So it's degenerate level, and you're sitting somewhere in the Coulomb blockade regime, okay? So classically, if you want, or not classically, but there is no level that you can tunnel through. Single particle behavior, you cannot tunnel through. So that's first order process is not allowed. Then you take this dot and you couple it very, very strongly. So you put it, first of all, that only the spin up is occupied and the spin down is unoccupied, okay? And then you couple it strongly to the leads. You open the dot a lot. So this wave function of the spin up electrons spills out and hybridizes with the electrons in the lead. And that's what I say, the spin degenerate level. And then you create sort of a dynamic singlet between this electron sitting in the dot and the many, many electrons in the lead. And you have this one electron and many, many body that gives you this many body single electron singlet. And as a result, and this is a big jump, as a result, when you crank it through, you get that in the transport density of states, at the Fermi energy, independent of the position here of the level, there is a peak in the density of states. And the width of this peak, the strength of this singlet, depends on the position of them. But the position of this peak is always at the Fermi energy. So we have a strong enhancement of the conduction between the peaks. Between when the two levels here, which are these are the broadening, is here, you have a strong enhancement of the conductance, which I'll show you experimentally. So if you don't have Kondo effect, namely if the dot is pinched off and this electron does not spill out, does not create this singlet, then you have a Coulomb blockade I showed you before. Okay, but if you come into this regime and the Kondo temperature becomes rather large, okay, and your temperature is smaller than the Kondo temperature, you get an enhancement of the conductance between valleys. So here, the electrons, let's say the dot is spin polarized, and then you add another electron, and now it's not spin polarized anymore, and then you go to Coulomb blockade peak, Coulomb blockade valley. So there's no condo here. And if it goes odd, even odd, then you're supposed to get condo pair, valley, condo pair, valley, etc. Ideally. Never happens. But ideally, that's what happens. That's what you expect to get. So the way that I sort of explained it to myself, it could be totally wrong, is that why do you have this enhancement by really hand-waving that the spin-up electron wave function spills out to the lead, okay? And then the spin-up electrons in the lead move away because of Pauli, okay? And then the spin-down electrons move in to create this singlet, and as they move in, they accumulate near the dot, right? So you have an accumulation, as small as it may be, you have an accumulation of these spin-down electrons near the dot, which bend the bends and give an attractive potential near the dot to spin down electrons, which I look at it as increasing the impinging rate on the dot and increasing the conductance. But this could be totally wrong, of course. So for me, this is sort of the way that I picture to myself that you have this spin up, this is my magnetic impurity, and this cloud of spin down are near the dot trying to hit it, you know, and get close to it, and the current is enhanced. But I don't think it's so important for the rest of the talk. Now,
I'm sorry, not an expert. I think one little thing which you can say about this is that your picture is, you know, it's very nice. Is a you have this spin up which polarizes the electron gas, and together it's zero spin. Now it could also be spin down,
right?
Polarized and get also zero.
No, it's dynamic. It flips all the time. Right.
States flip to each other all the time.
That's right.
Some of the story.
Right. So what happens is that when I say that the dot is occupied with spin-up electron, but it could be also occupied with spin-down electron. So and there's probably a dynamic effect. There is current going through. So one time spin-up electrons in the dot, and then all the cloud, it looks like this. And after, I don't know, a femtosecond, it becomes like this, and then the whole cloud disappears, and other, you know, the other spins come nearby. So it's a dynamic singlet that is breathing there. Okay. And of course, I measure something which is totally average. Now, the prerequisite for the Kondo effect, hence, is a spin-polarized quantum dot, so I need, not simplistically talking, odd number of electrons, even though people see that it doesn't happen only for odd number of electrons, as long as the spin is polarized, the dot is polarized, and the spin degenerate level, and strong coupling to the dot, you want to have very strong coupling to the dot, so this wave function will spill into the dot, and you want to work at very low temperature. And then how do you know you have Kondo effect? You just quench it. You do something to kill it. Okay. So the way that, and that's what we'll do in a minute, this is the way that we prove Kondo effect. We add an electron, for example, and rather than being spin up now, it is spin unpolarized. Or you pinch the dot and no coupling to the leads anymore. So you reduce in a way the Kondo temperature and it becomes smaller than the temperature, so Kondo disappears. Or you just increase the temperature above the Kondo temperature. Okay. Or you apply a DC voltage. Okay. So this is few ways that one can, that if the dot is in the Coulomb blockade regime, it will behave very differently than a dot in the Kondo regime. And this is the way that you identify Kondo. So this is a summary of the new dot. It's the same dot, but different parameters. So what we want to do, we want to couple the dot strongly to the leads. So each level has to be broad. So the level spacing has to be large, so the levels will not overlap each other. So we make a very small dot. So the principle is to make a smaller dot if you can, okay? So the dot is smaller, and the number of electrons is smaller, can be also 5, not necessarily 50. We have dots with 3 electrons there too. And the capacitance is smaller, so the charging energy gets larger, okay? And the level spacing gets larger. So that's about it, but otherwise the dot is maybe 4 or 5 times smaller in area, that's all. So the lithography is a bit more demanding. And then you see now this you find something like this and you say, aha, this looks really suspicious that this is here an enhancement to the Kondo. When you do Coulomb blockade, you don't see it so much, okay?
Is experimental?
Yes, everything is experimental here. And I'll show you now more experimental data all the time. And in Coulomb blockade, this is suppressed, this particular point. I think what we did here is could be the same dot that we killed Kondo and we went down with the valley down here. Okay. So what you do, you work in the lab and you find suddenly a valley which is up and you say, this could be Kondo, and then you test it. So what you do first, you change temperature. So in the Coulomb blockade valleys, the temperature might increase only the leakage through the valleys. So, but in the Congo regime, increasing temperature reduces the current. Okay, so you see this is the first strong fingerprint, and then you apply a DC voltage, and the same thing. When you apply DC voltage, it affects very little this valley, but you see that it takes this valley and kills it down. And, so this sort of everybody does it, and this is just to prove that indeed we have a condor dot.
So, what about the one that's two over?
What about this one?
Yeah,
you expect to say, where is the condor hill?
Yeah.
So you will see that it's never. I'll show you now four or five peaks. You never find, not never, seldom. Condor, non-condor, condor. Very seldom. There is all kinds of peculiarities because the spins are not probably, there is some Hounslow many times, so, and the electrons do not come in, and this, everybody has a little bit different dot and everybody different result, but the electrons usually don't come like this, one in, one this, they can come one like this, and suddenly one like this, and another, they can have triplets, and it's a very, very complicated thing. So I don't remember seeing, maybe twice we saw condo and in between.
So you're talking that the spin of the dot, it's not spin a half in those.
Yes, could be.
Is there a way to see the peak in between?
A peak?
I mean, there's a peak in the atmosphere state, so in the conductance, can you see an additional peak?
Not additional peak, okay, you will see in a minute. If you have a full-blown condo effect, you're supposed to get a conductance which is called in the conductance in the unitarity limit. What you're supposed to get, I'll show it few transparencies later. If this is something like this Coulomb blockade, and now if you have a full blown condor, then you get something like this. And this is 2E square over H. The fact that we have something that looks like this suggests that our condor temperature is not very large. But if I could, in every device, as a matter of fact, take the temperature to zero, you always will have condor effect. And then the conductance will be 2E square over H, which I'll show you. And this is the new data that we have, which was measured very recently. But it will not be a peak, it will be a flat.
Wait, the result of the peaks was not square over H. You have the scale with strong pinching and small pinching, and you have something like 0.6 or so.
0.6 or so what?
For the
hatch. Oh, I don't have E square over H, but I will, because I don't have fully blown condo, but I'll show you that. I'm not in the unitarity limit. I am sitting, yes, okay, the peaks, you are right, I cheated here. It's not, this is unitarity limit, and if you're away from unitarity limit, you get something like this.
Ah, okay.
Okay, and we are sitting here. But we will move to the unitarity limit in 5 minutes, okay? Okay, so this is something that you are familiar with. This is the interferometer. It's just another interferometer. But, you know, this is the dot. It's a small dot. And this extra lead here is just to help the electron to direct them into the drain from the source. And this is this bridge, and the electrons are going underneath. So this is, you're familiar with this picture already. So we make now a phase measurement in this picture. And I remind you now the expectations. So first what we measured in the Coulomb blockade regime is this. 0 to pi, I exaggerated here, but abrupt, 0 to pi, etc., etc. And this repeated itself forever. So now, here I'm going to show you this paper of Gerland et al. That talks about what do you expect to get now in the condor regime. So this is here the unitarity limit, okay, which I showed you now in 2E square over H. So this you're supposed to get. And the phase that they calculated is pi over 2. So it starts from 0, it climbs to pi, and here in the middle, it is a fixed pi over 2. Okay, now, if you increase now the temperature, then it starts having a little valley here, okay? And as it decreases more and more, this shrinks down, this comes down. I mean, it's not 0 to pi, but it's less than pi. And if you look at this paper, which I had, it's here. But I didn't have the reference, it was a PRL a year ago, or a year and a half ago, something like this. Okay, so that's the data that we started, but the most profound fact was this flat region of pi over 2. And here I show you like three different dots that we measured over the time. So now you just do the experiment again, and you have the conductance looks of this double path. This is really a four terminal. I just for simplicity did like a closed ring, but it's not a closed ring. It's the one I showed you. So you have these points, and you go and you start plotting again oscillations at every point, and you just and you just see that it first of all it's coherent, that the condo dot is a coherent has a coherent component, strong coherent component. Otherwise, probably it wouldn't be condo because it's many body that are interfering with themselves all the time. And here I'll show you just a bunch of results which are very different than the expected one. So again, this is the red line here is the conductance. Okay? So this is the a little bit enhanced valley. Okay? Not very much enhanced, a little bit enhanced. And this is sort of the Coulomb blockade regime. It's going up and has a phase slip. And then it goes into the condo regime. It has a flat region. It goes up, not as much as here, it goes up. And there is another phase slip, not so very fast, and up again. Now you see that from here to here it comes by pi, not pi over 2. And from here it's maybe 0.6 pi, not full pi. And this keeps repeating itself because as we move in a positive direction, we start overlapping peaks more and more. And we always have a tendency when we move in this direction that this valley, this height will be lower than this valley. But when you try to optimize it, you will see that this and this are pretty much the same. So here's one example.
So you don't know the absolute phase, don't you? This is all relative.
What do you mean by absolute phase?
I mean, you choose phase to be zero in a for a certain...
I pick a point here and
you pick a point, you call it zero.
Yeah, but like what's the meaning of up to 2 pi, everything? I just pick a phase and from there everything is relative to this phase.
Okay, yeah.
And if you look now on a different device now, you see it's much more clearly. It's totally a different device. And you see also here, 0 to pi. Very nice flat region here. Even though, see, the enhancement of condo is very small, but still it's a very, very different behavior than the up and down, right? And again, here it's smaller than pi. But here is another example that we tuned the dot a little bit different. And you see now more more than a couple of peaks. So see what happens here. These are two Coulomb blockade peaks. You're supposed to get Coulomb blockade and condo, and it's not. So this is Coulomb blockade, and now we have this very strong tool that tells us what's condo and what's Coulomb blockade. They are so different in phase. Condo and Coulomb blockade are different just in the valley height. You can argue, but the phase is a different world. Okay. So you see here, up and down, and suddenly here's condo. If you go ahead and prove, you see, and the enhancement here is, there's not much enhancement in the valley conductance. So if you go ahead and start changing temperature and voltage, you see, it comes down. It is indeed condo.
So the difference is whether you have a phase slip or not.
That's right. So this is just another, I don't encourage everybody to find condo by doing the whole thing and finding the phase, because you do it by changing the temperature. But it's, and here you see, it's going up, okay, it flattens out, and it goes up almost, so this is pi, and this is pi.
So how will this phase behave as you increase
the temperature? That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Okay, so what you see is we believe now that what you see here is 0 to pi and 2 pi, which is exactly twice the predicted one. You remember what you saw? 0 to half, twice. Okay? So now what you want to show really that if you now kill condo somehow, you come back to the Coulomb blockade. Right? Somebody knows how to turn this off? I guess they had the same thing here. I don't know how to turn. Okay.
Yesterday it was justified at the correct position.
Yes.
Where the voltage was applied.
Okay, so now what happens now when condo correlation is being destroyed? So we can destroy it now, for example, by just having the dot and pinching it off. Okay, which is reducing the condo temperature in a way. So if we move now in this direction, so you see now as I start now pinching it off, okay, closing it more and more, I start developing this little phase slip here, and here and here, okay. So the phase was here, sort of something that wants to be 2 pi, and finally it comes around to be pi, right? Exactly like the Coulomb blockade. So if you look at this here, it's just a normal Coulomb blockade. We already know how Coulomb blockade is supposed to look like. So by pinching it off, I move very nicely into the well-known Coulomb blockade.
Somehow the phase in the non-Coulomb valley, in the Coulomb blockade valley,
you talk about
knows about the what happened in the.
That's what I'm going to talk about. Yeah, exactly. This is the most surprising thing. Well, what you're really saying that the phase here, when you are here, you forgot about Kondo, no Kondo, because you had all the. This was electron up, let's say, and this was electron up and down, and the dot now is just non-magnetic anymore. So it doesn't even know that it was Kondo before, but still the phase here and the phase here are different. So somehow the dot, when it stays here, you know, there's a different phase, even though the dot apparently is the same here and here. I'll dwell on it a little bit later again.
You have two things. One of them you say is Kondo, the other was Coulomb blockade, right? In the previous
transparency. No, in the previous transparency.
No. Yeah.
But this is not necessarily the measurement of this particular one. I mean, let's say here. So you have here spin polarized and spin unpolarized. I mean, up and like this. Mm-hmm. And now you're back here into Coulomb blockade. Right? So if you're Coulomb blockade here, then we know that the phase zero and the phase zero is supposed to be the same. Because we know it every time Coulomb blockade repeats itself, but here you see it doesn't.
Yeah, but somehow the thing is that distinguishing between Kondo and Coulomb blockade was not so obvious if you did from the conductor's point of view. Because as you say, the second and third peak are more or less equivalent.
Right, but the phase tells me if I'm in the Kondo regime or not. I'll show you more examples when I focus on it. Now, if you now change, okay, so this is reducing coupling. Reducing coupling, I move from here to here, and now I can change the temperature. If I increase temperature, you see the phase comes back to Coulomb blockade? Right, the phase before was like this, and when I increase temperature to 1 Kelvin from 100 millikelvin, it comes back to Coulomb blockade just by changing temperature. And if I change voltage, well, it's not so pretty. The reason that these things become not as pretty when you increase temperature and voltage, because don't forget that you don't have just a Kondo dot, you have a whole interferometer there. And you have to measure the phase. So the dephasing lengths in the RMs get smaller, I mean, everything changes there. So when you increase temperature or voltage, the results are much more milky. But you can see already that it you don't have this flat and going up again. So this is very distinct behavior that this is sort of like a middle summary. I'll have another summary in a second, but that's what you get in the Kondo regime, and when you can switch from here back to here by changing the parameter. So what happens after this, very recently we successfully moved into the unitarity regime, and the unitarity regime is only T is just smaller than TK, that's all. You just are working in temperature which is very small. And it's more difficult to do because the temperature is the temperature of the electrons. And you have to cool the electrons very much. The lattice is all the time cold. It sits there at, you know, 20 millikelvin or something, but the electrons can be quite hot, can be at 100 millikelvin. So when you cool down now the electrons, and this is unitarity limit other people did, it was done in Delft and
what is how did you now cool down the electrons?
Okay, so this is technological method. So so everybody has his own bag of tricks. What usually the electrons are get hot because they have some, let's say, all radiation that comes in and being absorbed, they absorb photons and they get hot. Or you don't heat sink. The way that you can cool the electron, you can have less energy coming in to heat them up, or you can also heat sink them better. The way they cool themselves usually is by having a good thermal conduction from the two-dimensional electron gas to the leads, and the leads usually are coaxial cable, and you have to cool down the inner part of the coaxial cable. Okay?
So you have improved sort of the...
That's right. So we just improved all the, you know, and every day we improve it more. We add the filter here and do this. It's all technological.
What is your estimate of the Kondo temperature?
The Kondo temperature is about a Kelvin or two. So now you see that you get now...
Sorry, one more question. To get the height of the conductance to be 1, you need also, in the normal Coulomb blockade, you need the two transmission
to be
the same.
Right.
So you tune that too.
Well, but this is true. True. I don't know ever if it's the same, but we play until we get a maximum conductance. So probably they are similar. So you see here is sort of a result that other people see too, and here it's almost 2, it's 1.8. But you see now that the value enhancement is way up. And the reason also to go ahead and look at this particular into the unitarity limit and push it to it was that when I showed first the result of this pi, then Igor Meir told me, well, you're far from the unitarity limit, I don't know what's happening. So maybe when you go to the unitarity limit, it will be now not pi, but pi over 2. Okay. And the other thing that was very surprising, that the phase that Yuval was asking now was very different on both sides of the condo. So we wanted to study it more. So this is the reason that we made the push to go to the unitarity limit. So here the black dots is now the temperature was reduced from something like close to 100 millikelvin to 45 millikelvin. And people now know how to go down even much less than 20 millikelvin and even less than this. And then you want to show that this is condo, so you start now, okay, changing the coupling to the leads and reducing the coupling strength, okay? So you see that you are now starting, as you reduce the coupling strength, you start developing this valley, okay, as you expect. And if you increase the temperature, same thing happens, you see, this is coming down. So this is the same thing as before. So basically we are having a new dot which is sitting at a lower temperature and it's strongly coupled to the leads, okay? So now we just have to take now this dot and measure now the phase. Oh, and this is increasing the voltage also. Just going through the whole, you know, procedure, just to show that this is indeed condo. So we now measure the phase. So first, you know, that's the same picture. You see this is the plunger, this is the magnetic field. So here you see oscillations, and you see that as we change, move along the dot, you see the phase over here. You see here a phase, and you see a jump. This is just a picture that's confusing, but it shows you how we measure the phase from here. But this is the important picture. So look what happens now. So now, this is a dot in the condo regime, right? That's the conductance, or the visibility of the oscillation. And now the phase looks like a totally straight line. Totally straight line. It doesn't go from up to 2 pi, it goes less. But this is always kind of, it never reaches even 2 pi there, but it comes to, you know, 1.5 from here to here. So, but there is no flat region at all, it just goes as a straight line.
The dips are already the dips of the...
Dips here. Wait, okay, these are the Coulomb blockade. So you have Coulomb blockade...
It's already the Coulomb blockade of the neighboring valley.
Yes, neighboring yes. Valley and valley.
And therefore the drop in the phase is the... Standard.
The standard Coulomb blockade.
The standard phase lapse.
Yes. So you have now the standard phase lapse here, the standard phase lapse here. But in the middle, this disappears and it becomes a straight line, totally featureless. So, it's very dangerous to measure phase, because every time you measure, you get something crazy. But now, again, coming back to what you were asking, this is exactly the question we ask ourselves. If the dot here and the dot here are the same, this is Coulomb blockade, spin unpolarized. And spin unpolarized, this is supposed to be the same value of this, the phase. But it's not. This point sits at about a pi or so above the other one, knowing somehow that there was condo before. I mean, when you're sitting here at the dot, and I'll show you now the experiment that we did in a minute just to show it. If you're sitting here now, and the dot is just have even number, let's say, of electrons, somehow the phase now is different than it was before. Namely, there is some memory to the dot that there was condo before. I'm just making the world somehow. I'm saying it. I don't. So what this is asking you to do is let's kill condo again. See what happens now. So what you do? It's just reminding you the Coulomb blockade. But if you now go, so now you go ahead now and you start reducing the coupling. So you go from this. And you start now developing the valley, you go back to the Coulomb blockade, and now you see the phase, and this data is not as pretty as before. You start with the red one, phase going up, and the jump, and as you go to the blue, you see it comes down, and it comes down here. So you see that these two points, there is always a little change here, which is, you cannot avoid it. It comes just because some phase added to the system. But this point and this point are very close now. They're almost at the same phase. So when I now pinch off the dot and kill the condo that was here, It was somehow here. The phase after the condo somehow changes. This is, I don't know, I think it's totally crazy. I don't know, you understand how absurd is this? Okay, so now what you do, instead of reducing the coupling, you also can change it by temperature, which is maybe not as pretty, but if you increase the temperature now, and again, take this value and take it down, also, this is not as nice, but the red line that goes up, as you see before, this point, this starting, it's not exactly here, okay? It's not exactly at this point here, but it comes down. And when you increase the voltage here, also, this becomes really Coulomb blockade almost, periodic. Okay. So somehow, when you take the condo and have this, the first guy that asked me, how can I explain it, that the phase after the condo and before the condo are not the same, was Pete Bowers. I gave this talk, and he asked me, I said, how can it be? And I said, I never thought about it, okay? It's there, but I never thought about it. That somehow, you sit here in a Coulomb blockade, and here in a Coulomb blockade, and we know that Coulomb blockade is a periodic, and now it suddenly stopped being periodic, because in between there was condo. So I think that this is pretty much what I wanted to tell you. That's the data. Thank you.
Just to emphasize, the fact that you call it pi, is Hans asking, is not so important how we call it. The important thing is that there is one pi in the first column blockade peak, and almost one pi, little less, but almost one pi in the second column blockade peak. So the total change.
I'm talking about the change, delta phase, right, rather than
the
phase.
The change to the condo.
As you go through the two peak, yes.
It's yes. 2 pi, when before it was supposed to be pi theoretically, it was zero experimentally, because it was the phase lapse.
Yes, yes.
So can I say that the difference is one phase slip?
Yes, between the two things,
so,
right.
So what happens in a phase slip? Does the amplitude of the oscillations go to zero?
No, they don't go to zero. They don't go to zero,
so
it's just the phase jumps.
If I looked at the Coulomb blockade oscillations, they actually...
No, yes, well, you didn't see there in this picture? Yes, they just suddenly jump. I mean, it's difficult a bit to see it here, but you have this thing here, and then it jumps back to here. A very short period, it jumps here. Yeah, it changes, and then over a very short region, it jumps the phase.
The
amplitude is already very small because you're in the valley all the time that it happens. It doesn't go to zero, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to measure it. So we always...
It's not just changing the sign.
No. It jumps. It really jumps. And you have more than one point. You have two points. In the phase slip that I showed you before, it's not zero energy width. Well, I have a reminder somewhere. No, where did I have a reminder? I thought I have a reminder here. Here. There is... When they have this phase slip here, at this particular point, there is one point and one point here, but there is 3 points here, and there is here, sometimes I don't put, but there are more than one point here and one point here. You can carefully measure it and find a couple of points here. So it really, you can see on the screen how it moves back, but on a very short energy scale.
What happens if you move the other direction?
That doesn't make any difference. You mean if you change the plunger like this or like this?
And
there is no hysteresis. No hysteresis at all. We measure it this way or this way. It doesn't make any difference.
To me, it seems like the explanation of what's happening in the condo effect is going to depend on the explanation of what these.
Right, because. Right. I say that it's a dot, and it sits in this region or this region, just if the condo is big, temperature condo is bigger or smaller. But I claim that we really don't have full explanation of how a dot is working, because every time we measure a phase, we get something unexpected. But the very nice thing here that the valley, you can really, you start from the unitarity limit or even less, and you start killing the valley. The valley gets lower and lower and lower, and the phase is kind of like straight line, and then it's flat, and then it stays flat for a very, very long time, even though the valley goes down and down, and at some point it breaks down into a slip. So somehow there is some rigidity to the phase, that even if there is very slight enhancement due to condo, the phase is very rigid, sitting in this pi, not pi over 2. But it's not pi, it's supposed to be pi over 2. It's supposed to have electrons going through a barrier, closed barrier, not quasi-particles.
In other words, you're saying that the condo correlations affect more the phase.
Phase than the conductance, right. So if it would be easy to measure conductance, you just measure the, if it would be easy to measure the phase, just measure the phase and you see this flat reading, you know you're on the condo regime.
The conductance,
if the conductance is almost very lightly enhanced, right. Because it's such, for 4 years we never saw, we saw only this repetition of phase. And only when we moved into the condo and saw this, start looking for it, and suddenly we start seeing this very different phase behavior. Okay? So you have to look for this and then you find it, but if you just Coulomb blockade, you never see it. So it's sort of like almost a phase transition, going from condo to Coulomb blockade. I think we should just give much more credit to phase, because it's a very powerful entity. It's just more difficult to measure, because you have to build an interferometer rather than just put in an emitter, but... I think we should have respect to it, Hans, like in superconductors.
Yeah, oh yeah, phase is a different stuff.
Is it through the Clio, it can measure phase now? The rumors that there are some measurements for the
moment, not yet. I don't know everything. Leo was in Harvard and that just before I came here. I may not know everything. Yeah.
So